Welcome. We're very happy to have you join us, and we are doing a series of lessons from the Scriptures, a series of 13 lessons. This is number 7, entitled Jesus Wept, the Bible and Human Emotions. This particular lesson is entitled Hope Against Depression. And I would like to begin with a word of prayer. Our kind and wonderful Father, it is with great anticipation that we gather together here to meet with you and to talk about your word. May we discover things here that are useful for ourselves and for others is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. As suggested by the title, this lesson is about depression and the loss of hope that it implies. Depression comes in many flavors, from all the way from minor discouragements to major depression. Some of you who work with patients, you know all that implies. How does God feel about or relate to mental illness? Did God originally make us susceptible to, say, depression, for example? Or did our ability to become depressed begin when sin entered? Now, I'm sure there was nobody depressed until after sin entered, but was the capacity for depression there before, or is this something that is developed after sin came into our world? Mental health professionals teach us that some forms of depression result from a chemical imbalance in the brain. Some chemicals which don't last as long as they're supposed to, and there's other things that are chemicals being produced and destroyed too quickly and so forth. And we can help those people with some fairly simple medicines. Does that imply that hope, which would be something of an opposite to depression, does that imply that hope is a correct balance of brain chemicals? Okay, isn't that enough questions for me to pose to start out with?
Yeah, not try one that we can answer.
How do you think God relates to mental illness?
Same way he deals with sin. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it makes him very sad, but it's part of human condition at this point.
Yeah.
Sin has done a number on us.
Mm-hmm. I think it makes him as sad as it makes us.
Yeah. Really.
So does God get depressed then? Is that what you mean
now,
by
that's
sad?
A pretty big jump.
Yeah, that's a pretty big jump.
Well, let's talk about what depression is.
What's
the difference between sadness and depression then? I think God doesn't like when we're depressed. When we hurt, he hurts. I don't know that makes him depressed, but I don't think he's joyful when we're hurting.
No.
So I don't know what you want to call that, mm-hmm. but I think he responds to when we're in trouble.
It's interesting to notice that one of the great examples of apparent depression in the Bible is Elijah. He literally, and maybe we better look at that verse because people might question it, 1 Kings 19:4, and there it is on the top of your screen, Elijah walked a whole day into the wilderness. He stooped and sat down in the shade of a tree and wished he would die. "It's too much, Lord," he replied. "Take away my life. I might as well be dead." Okay. How would you describe that if you're a mental health professional? Suicidal ideation, huh?
Acute exogenous depression.
Acute exogenous depression, okay. It's very interesting that same Elijah, not too long after that, was taken to heaven without dying.
And just a short time before this, before that verse that you read, he was on Mount Carmel opposing, killing 850 prophets of Baal.
At a high point in the history of Israel, probably, yeah.
Ken, I'm wondering if maybe depression bothers God more than some of the physical illnesses that people have. Because with depression, there is this feeling of hopelessness. Mm-hmm. And God has an answer for that. Mm-hmm. That people don't always want to hear it. But the answer is there, or one thing that could help. Mm-hmm. And that would be a positive attitude with God.
Mm-hmm.
you have something to live for if you have God.
But you know, when you have a chemical imbalance, do you really have control over that?
Well, we now have control of it through medications.
Yeah, but not everybody can get the medication.
Yeah.
And sometimes
you can't sort of wish yourself control over that.
But I think there are actions and choices that lead to thought patterns that can create chemical imbalance.
Yeah.
And that you do have control over.
But can't you also say that it's a little more basic than that? I wonder what Elijah had to eat on a regular basis. I mean,
Especially when he's running all day long.
If people are malnourished, they don't get certain vitamins and minerals, you can get mentally ill. It's known.
Yeah.
If you don't live how we are told in the Bible to live, the devil can take advantage of where you get yourself. So there's mental illness in another sphere.
Yeah.
But what about Job? Was he depressed? He, a couple times he said, "Man, I wish I was never born."
Yeah.
What did he do?
Well, let's take some other examples. We mentioned Job now. We mentioned Elijah. It's interesting that Psalm 42, which if you believe the little headings under the psalm, which we're not sure where they came from, but they're very old. We know that. It says it was written by the sons of Korah. We'll get to that in a moment. And it says in verse 3, "Day and night I cry, and tears are my only food. All the time my enemies ask me, 'Where is your God?'" How would you describe the condition of that person? Tears are my only food?
Depressed.
Depressed. Sounds like it, doesn't it?
What is the name for the mental condition that makes you drop sweat of blood?
Well, there's a long name, and I've forgotten it. Yeah.
But it's not happiness or joy.
No.
Is it depression?
Or something beyond that.
In the garden?
Yeah. Garden of Gethsemane.
Yeah. Yeah, but is all depression from your choice?
No, I don't think anybody chooses depression.
It seems like we're kind of heading that way every time. I mean, if somebody's hitting you over the back and you've got pain in your back, you know, there's you got pain because you're being hit.
Yeah.
Same with depression. If things aren't going very well or things are just not working out any time, there's a continuous pain coming from that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think they're similar.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually similar. It's just what kind of choices are you going to make because in spite of that pain.
Yeah.
I think that's one reason why salvation doesn't have anything to do with performance.
Mm-hmm.
Because if somebody is depressed and he just doesn't have the strength to do something, you know, that it may be out of his control. And if it's out of his control, then how in the world is he going to put himself in a position to be saved?
Yeah.
Is making a choice performance?
Well, sometimes if you go outside and it's cold, you want to go back in, but you know you got to go and get something. You're going to make the decision to go get something and bring it back.
Yeah. I was thinking more of your statement that salvation is not related to performance. Is making a decision performance?
Making a decision? If Ken wants to run the
LA Marathon,
and you say, "I want to do it," but you end up not doing it, have you performed just by making that decision and then not doing it?
Well, you performed something. You made a decision, but you didn't you didn't do a marathon.
Well, I don't know. I think there's some lines there you can draw as far as performance goes.
Getting back to our Bible story, an interesting little detour. Who were these sons of Korah? Anybody, who was Korah?
They were the descendants of the Korah who rebelled in the wilderness, Sinai Desert, we call it, against the authority of Moses and Aaron.
Korah was Moses' cousin.
That's right.
From the tribe of Levi. Mm. And his tent was not too far from the tents of a couple leaders from the tribe of Reuben, named Dathan and Abiram, or Abiram. And the three of them decided that they could do a better job of leading Israel than Moses and Aaron were doing. And they chose to start a rebellion. And the result was thousands of people died. But it's interesting, if you look, and you can read all about that in Number 16, and it says, you know, if you go there, it says, you know, they were swallowed up and their families and so forth, but it doesn't mention Korah's family specifically until you get over to Numbers 26, verse 11. And it says there, very interestingly, if you go back up to verse 10, well, verse 9, and his sons Nemuel, Dathan, and Abiram, these are the Dathan and Abiram who were chosen by the community. They defied Moses and Aaron and joined the followers of Korah when they rebelled against the Lord. The ground opened and swallowed them, and they died with Korah and his followers when fire destroyed 250 men. They became a warning to the people. But the sons of Korah were not killed. So his descendants apparently were not a part of the rebellion, which is very interesting, even though their father was. And in the case of Reuben, apparently all their descendants were involved in the rebellion, but in Korah's case, they were not. And it turns out, if you follow your Bible through carefully, you get down to the time of David, and descendants of these sons of Korah were the major, at least two or three or maybe more, of the major musicians of the temple were of the from these sons of Korah. And they wrote a number of psalms, Psalm 42 through 49, 84, 85, 87, and 88. So it's very interesting when you read these Bible, you read the Bible carefully, you pick up little bits and pieces that... Why do you suppose the sons of Korah didn't perish when the sons of Dathan and Abiram did?
Because the sons of Korah did not agree with their father or grandfather who rebelled.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
They did not agree with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the next question, is it a sin to be depressed?
No. You just brought up the sons of Korah.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with the depression?
Well, because they're the ones who are saying all we have to eat is food. The only food we have to eat is tears. They're the ones, and they wrote some other passages that are similar to that. So I just detoured a little bit on the authors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ken, in my Bible has a header on verse 42. It says a prayer of someone in exile.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, so. Could this be the post-Babylon exile? Could this have
been
created? Well,
I suppose maybe somebody thought that, but...
RSV says a maskil of the sons of Korah.
Yeah, that's what it says literally. A maskil of the sons of Korah. Now, I don't know how you got... And yours said what again?
Prayer of someone in exile.
Down in the footnote, further down, it says, for the leader of the choir, a poem by the clan of Korah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what yours says too, huh, Dennis? Yeah, okay. That's interesting. In exile, huh? Well, you could see why maybe someone in exile would be crying like that.
Yeah, I mean, that fits, but I don't know where this would fit in Israel's history.
Well, if it's in the exile, it would have to be many years later in the time of the Babylonian. We know that Psalm 139 wasn't written until the days of the Babylonian exile, so maybe some of these other psalms were also written that late. So, it's possible. Well, I asked the question, is it a sin to be depressed?
I'm still having a hard time defining what depression is.
Well, okay. Maybe we can talk about that.
I mean, if your grandfather dies, you're sad. Is that depression?
No.
What if you were going to go to the baseball game and it got rained out and you wanted to go really bad, and then you get
sad? Is that
depression?
It's disappointment. Now, there are, like I said at the beginning, there is this whole range, this whole spectrum from disappointment, or then maybe mild depression, all the way down to major depression where you want to kill yourself. So there's a huge spectrum, and let's not try to pretend that all those are exactly the same. Every one of us has experienced minor depression, minor disappointments, maybe major disappointments, maybe even mild depression, but about that point, it starts breaking off, and the ones that go beyond that have mental illness.
Is depression when you let these negative thoughts that we all have, when you concentrate on them enough, that you begin to make life decisions and take actions based on those negative feelings?
Well, let's look at that for a moment. Christians instinctively should turn to God in times like this, when they need help, when there's a problem, when they're discouraged, when they're depressed. But at times it's necessary also to seek professional help. Apparently some people even have a genetic predisposition to depression. Those people particularly need to seek professional help. Now, it is specifically with reference to your question, your point, it is important for us as Christians and human beings not to employ catastrophic thinking. When things do not work out our way, it is sometimes easy to suggest to ourselves that we are dumb or incompetent, something that way. We can even look at the world very pessimistically, suggesting that things are not fair to us. If this becomes severe, we can think the situation is hopeless and think things that could never possibly improve. And those are the kind of situations, if you think that all day long, pretty soon depression becomes a very high likelihood, and even to the point of suicide in some cases.
So it builds up because of negative thinking? Is that what you're saying?
Part of it.
Does it make a difference whether you have depression or depression has you?
Well, absolutely it makes a difference. And there's probably a span, probably a progression there. From you feel depressed, and then pretty soon it's all you can think about, and then it has you.
It's obvious that none of you men have ever been depressed.
That is probably true.
That's obvious.
I will speak as a woman who's had three children, and after the first one, there was the chemical imbalance. I know the reasoning, but after my first child was born, 2 weeks after, I thought, why in the world did I ever have this child? Mm-hmm. The world's going to come to an end. It was not something that there was. I had a beautiful child. I had a good marriage. There was no reason for depression.
Oh, there was, just not a logical.
Well, I mean, yes, there was not something that I could sit there and go, oh, well, everything's just terrible. It's just terrible. Look at all these terrible things. It wasn't something I was dwelling on. It was engulfing me, and more so even when I had my hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. And they hadn't started me on hormones soon enough.
Yeah.
And I sat there and I thought, I understand now more completely how people that are so depressed want to kill themselves, mm-hmm. because there was just this overwhelming, and I knew what the reason was. I called Gordon. I said, you think I need to increase my hormones? You know, a couple days later, I was fine. But it is an overwhelming, uncontrollable.
Yeah, well, I talk to people like that every day.
Yeah.
It's part of what I do.
If you've never experienced it, you just don't realize how engulfing it is.
But I think for women, your hormonal balance has been so tossed around in pregnancy. Postpartum depression, real major.
I'll say I wasn't exactly pleasant.
I remember dealing with somebody years ago and put her baby down the linen chute. I mean, that's where that goes. Fortunately, they found it. Now, getting back to your question, is depression a sin? I think you're getting dreadful close when you kill half your family and then kill yourself. That's sin.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like, though, the depression is kind of helping you push you to do something, but you still have to make the decision to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Depression sometimes keeps you from making decisions also.
Yeah.
That's
the problem. Yeah, but it's really easy to do the negative ones.
Paralyzed by depression.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kinds of things would God want us to think about and remember if we're leaning or we're slipping in the direction of depression? Well, one thing I'm sure he wants us to remember is that, and those of us around this circle mostly are, well, all of us, I think, are Seventh-day Adventists. We look to the writings of Ellen White for guidance. She says repeatedly that Jesus Christ would have died for one person. So when we have a tendency to feel depressed, we need to remember Jesus Christ would have died just for us. Not for us collectively, just for me, if necessary.
Now, are you asking for an intellectual thought process to solve that problem she was talking about?
What I'm saying is, hers was primarily hormonally related. We know that.
So we're going to check that off as a different kind?
Well, it's a different, yes, there are lots of different kinds. And that's a different kind. Mm-hmm. But
does this process that you're talking about work for that?
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah. But for the simple kinds of depression that most people start into, and then they get into the catastrophic thinking and it just sort of snowballs, those kind of people, when that process starts, they need to remember this thing that I have mentioned.
Those "I'm so worthless" thoughts,
yeah.
They need to correct.
Yeah. And even from Scripture, we know that when things are looking bad, we need to remember verses like Philippians 4:8, which we're all probably memorized at some time or another. In conclusion, my brothers and sisters, this is Paul writing from prison, not knowing that he's going to be alive the next day. Okay? In conclusion, my brothers and sisters, fill your minds with those things that are good and that deserve praise. So Paul is saying, even in this world, there are things that are good and deserve praise, things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, and honorable. So we need to be thinking about the things that would fall into those categories.
He wrote to the Philippians, I think it was, and said, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice." Mm. Sounds like a therapy for depression.
Yeah. Well, ultimately the Christian must think about the future. No matter how bad things get here on this earth, even if we should be martyred, our future is certain if we do not give up on God. Heaven is an absolutely wonderful and glorious place, and each one of us can reach there if we do not give up hope. So I would say that sadness, which may lead to depression, but sadness itself is not a sin. It's not a cause for feeling guilty. Things may seem to be going very badly, and our personal feelings may make it seem even worse than it is, but that's no reason for us to give up our hope in God.
So when Job was, quotes, depressed, was he actually just extremely sad when he said, "I should never have been born"?
No, he qualified to be by the definition, he was depressed.
Yeah, situational.
Yeah.
Economic and physical reason. and socially, he was a wreck.
Yeah, and yet, though, in the middle of all of that, he can say, "I don't care how bad off I am, I'm still going to trust him."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that kind of action can even come out of severe depression.
Yeah.
That's encouraging,
well,
huh?
Yes.
I'm having trouble, like Gary, with the definition of depression. There's depression for which there is no external cause or external explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's depression, like Jane Ann was talking to a high school friend of hers today who may be depressed. I don't know, but she's lost her husband, she's lost her parents recently. She has reason to be down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that depression? Is that the depression we're talking about? And those people with bipolar depression, is that something else? Can we divide between
I can say from a professional standpoint, medical standpoint, is I work with a lot of psychiatrists. And it's very clear that some kind of depressions respond to some medications, and other kinds of depression respond much better to other kinds of medications and don't respond to these medications that these people. So that suggests that there's a different chemical, different something going on back in there. But we have lots of choices today of ways to treat depression, all the way from the relatively mild, relatively simple, all the way down to the people who are, trying to kill themselves. And we have medicines for that whole spectrum. But you need to know what you're doing, which one of those goes for what.
I think definition and classification are two different things. It's classified, but I think some of this is a bit hard to define. If you're talking of delusions, you can define some of that. But depression is a wide spectrum.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you think about this comment from Psalm 34, verse 18? The Lord is near to those who are discouraged. Does that include disappointments and depression? He saves those who have lost all hope. Now, that sounds more like depression, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that verse supports my previous contention that if we remember how much God cares about each one of us, it should make a difference. Well,
what about, that is a problem sometimes, remembering who God is and mm-hmm. where he's at. Thinking about Jacob, mm-hmm. Right when his brother was ready to do him in, or he thought he was, that was a pretty bad situation for him. Mm-hmm. And then he struggled with the angel all night. Mm-hmm. And then when he found out who he was, he grabbed onto him and just wouldn't let him go. That
by
may
grab,
be an answer.
Get a hold of an angel?
Yeah, or his leg or something, and whatever. But, that choice to just grab on and not let go, even though you just want to maybe throw it all out, is a decision that needs to be made even if you're depressed.
Mm-hmm. Is there a pattern of if you get a little bit sad? Mm-hmm. And you turn and look to Scripture and promises to say, no, it's not all that bad. God and I can get through this. Mm-hmm. And you do that with all of your downs. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would make it easier at a time of depression to go that route? When it is, if you've never done that, mm-hmm. to try and use that as a mechanism to get out might be a little tougher.
Yeah. Well, there's been several questions about depression and its definition. How do we know when a person is depressed? And here's some suggestions. They have feelings of hopelessness, helplessness, despair. They feel like there's nothing to live for. And you can think of some examples from the Bible of people who were deeply discouraged or in despair, even depression. Consider the case of David in Psalm 32. For example, Psalm 32, verses 3 through 7. When I did not confess my sins, I was worn out from crying all day long. How would you describe that condition? Day and night you punished me, Lord. My strength was completely drained as moisture is dried up by the summer heat. Then I confessed my sins to you. I did not conceal my wrongdoings. I decided to confess them to you, and you forgave all my sins. So all your loyal people should pray to you in times of need. When a great flood of trouble comes rushing in, it will not reach them. You are my hiding place. You will save me from trouble. I sing aloud of your salvation because you protect me. So here's someone who went from, it sounded like, some pretty severe depression to a solution by turning to the Lord.
I suspect that wasn't the first time.
No, it wasn't the first time. You already talked about Elijah. What about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane? You mentioned that. I'm just going to pick out one. There's Matthew 26, 36 to 46, Mark 14, 32 to 42. I'm going to pick out Luke 22, starting with verse 39. And look at these words about Jesus himself. Now here's God. Jesus left the city and went, as he usually did, to the Mount of Olives. This is Luke 22, 39 and following. And the disciples went with him. When he arrived at the place, he said to them, pray that you will not fall into temptation. Then he went off from them about the distance of a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed. Father, he said, if you will, take this cup of suffering away from me. Not my will, however, but your will be done. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. Now, there's a lot of In great anguish, he prayed even more fervently. His sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Now, here's a very specific case. We know what happened. It's right there in the Bible. Why would it be necessary for an angel to come and strengthen him?
could have died there. He was so stressed by what was happening, basically by his being separated from the Father, and he felt that so intensely that he would have died right there if an angel hadn't strengthened him.
Would any human in that condition die?
Presumably.
Is that
unless God didn't allow it.
Is that the death of the wicked?
Could be. Yeah. Well, rising from his prayer, he went back to the disciples and found them asleep, worn out by their grief. He said to them, "Why are you sleeping? Get up and pray that you will not fall into temptation." I mean, here is someone who is on the point of death, and he's encouraging other people, you know, don't be so discouraged.
We're passing over this quite quickly, as if Jesus was dying human death. He was dying the first death.
No.
But don't we have a different understanding?
Yes.
And we're talking about something beyond beyond our comprehension, are we not?
Well, yeah, to a considerable extent, yes.
So maybe this may not apply to the common depression here. It might go far beyond that.
What I'm saying is here's a case of someone who is way beyond what any of us experience, I'm sure. And in this case, God felt that it was appropriate to send an angel to rescue him from dying right there. Mm-hmm. Which, in my point, is to support what I've said earlier, that if we turn to God, he would even come to the point of sending an angel to rescue us from this kind of situation. Now, as Dennis has suggested, there is strong support, I believe, for the idea that Jesus was actually dying the second death here. The death which is a direct result of sin. Now, we don't have time. It would be fun to take a big, long detour and go through all those verses and support that idea. We can't do that right now. We've talked about some of those ideas in the past here. But here's a case where, you know, you would have thought, those of us who understand that there's a war going on between God and Satan, and there's this controversy back and forth and so forth, you would have thought that the devil would have been happy to have Jesus dead right there. But I would like to suggest he absolutely didn't want Jesus to die right there. What would be the reason for that?
He knew he'd lost.
What?
He knew he'd lost.
Yeah. Jesus. The moment Jesus is dead, Satan knows it's over. If he has not gotten him to either do... Satan was trying to get Jesus to do one of two things. Either to sin, because of the terrible circumstances, either by whatever, becoming depressed or whatever, or a simpler solution would be just to say, give it all up, saying these humans aren't worth it. Go back to heaven. You could do that without sinning. And that's what the devil was hoping for. And Jesus said, no, I'm not going to do that. I came here to do a job, and I'm going to do the job I came here to do.
Well, when the angel,
even if it kills me, which it did.
If the angel came back to strengthen him, maybe just the fact that the angel was there brought God back to him close enough to keep him going for a while. I don't see how he could... I don't see how God could be completely away from him and then him still living to perform the whole thing to the cross, could he?
Because because he was God himself. But no, he didn't. He was going through this as a human being.
How would that demonstrate anything if he kept alive even though he was separating from God? Mm-hmm. So right. I think that the angel coming back to him was just a cue that the God was coming back at some level to keep him alive at that time.
But, yes, Don.
It seems to me that what we're talking about here is something that we are going to reason about for eternity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is not something that you flip over and say, here it is. Mm-hmm. This has got much depth to it.
Well, we've suggested here that the opposite of despondency, despair, depression is hope. How do we promote hope?
Without depression.
Probably not my will, but yours be done. is about as good as we can get to generating hope.
Does it help to practice the presence of God in your life?
Oh, absolutely.
How do you practice the presence of God?
Well, we have free access to the scriptures, which a lot mm-hmm. of people don't have. That's a start.
Yes, absolutely. Anybody else? Practicing the presence of... I've heard pastors preach on that.
When good things happen to you, you praise God. Mm-hmm. When bad things happen to you, you trust in God. Mm-hmm. That's the practicing the presence of God.
There's a verse in the Bible that I would like us to take a moment and look at in a moment. It's not mentioned in this particular lesson, but I would like to take you there. Go to 1 Thessalonians 5, and let's try, I think it's 17 here. Yeah. What does it mean to pray at all times? The King James says, pray without ceasing. What does that mean?
Keep God ever present with you.
Would that be practicing the presence of God?
Well, yeah. Practicing is something that you keep practicing.
It means in everything you're doing, whether it's your ordinary work, whether it's something spiritual, whether it's studying the Bible, whether it's going to church, at all times, you keep in mind, God is right here with me. God is right here with me. He's going through this experience with me. What difference does that make? How does that impact me? And so forth. If we're used to thinking, God is right here with me, it's a lot harder to let Satan separate us from God, as if we don't know where God is, we've completely lost him. If we're used to keeping him right next to us.
In Western society, we tend to compartmentalize an awful lot of our lives, and God's in that corner, and business is over here, and fun and relationships are over here. In other cultures, even some heathen cultures, their gods are after them all the time, and their whole day, whatever it is, whether it's making a meal or hunting an animal or whatever it is, they're continually appeasing the god that is after them moment by moment. Now, that's a very negative way of experiencing God. If we could take that kind of continuancy, that continuum of having God with us all the time, but a much more benevolent mm-hmm. God.
Mm-hmm. A God that we seek after.
That's right.
All the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and stop and think just a couple of logical things. If God is on our side, is there any problem that we can't deal with? Now, you probably all remember the song which says, it's not the real question. Abraham Lincoln supposedly asked this in the middle of the Civil War. The question is not if God is on my side, but whether I'm on his.
Yes.
So I guess that would be the first question. Are we on God's side? And if we're on God's side, would he allow us to become depressed? Or would he go through it with us?
Yeah, that's a good point there.
Mm-hmm. Certainly feeling hopeless and helpless doesn't promote the Christianity, I wouldn't think.
But without me, ye can do nothing, Jesus says. So we do need to get to the place where we feel hopeless as far as depending on ourselves is concerned.
Okay.
And have a dependence on him. Mm-hmm. Now, if we give up that dependence and look at the negatives around us and we give up that connection, I think that's when we go into despair and into depression.
Well, it's very clear that there are different cultural ways of expressing sadness, despair, depression. A number of places in the Bible it talks about people who are very sad or depressed, and they're putting gunny sacks on and they're throwing ashes on their head or dirt on their head. Now, how would we respond if we saw someone doing that today?
could send them down
to the
BMC.
Smiling.
The county tank.
Send them down somewhere for some psychological help, right? So we need to recognize that our response to certain things is culturally determined. We don't immediately think of burlap and ashes when we get discouraged.
I think that culture can come down to the family as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't know anything more than what your family has done with their depression or their sadness or how they dealt with things,
mm-hmm.
if they don't have God in their lives, how do they deal with it? How do they deal with this life?
Yeah.
That would be hard.
Yeah. Well, the Bible suggests some interesting things. Psalms 31:10. Can you get exhausted, literally exhausted, by weeping? Sure. Could it actually shorten your life?
Mm-hmm.
Look at Psalm 77:4, I'm sorry. Have you ever been so worried that you couldn't speak? Mm. Or what about Psalm 102, verses 4 and 5? I am beaten down like dry grass. I have lost my desire for food. I groan aloud. I'm nothing but skin and bones. What do you suppose led to that?
Depression. Lack of food.
Lack of food because of depression. Lack of eating.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Did somebody sin to get to there, you think? Or can it just happen?
Well,
I mean, I don't know. I'm getting to formulate my definition of depression. It's just a form of pain, is basically what it is. Some people may have this pain, even though they're a Christian,
mm-hmm.
and they seek after the Lord, and they still may have it.
Psychological pain.
Yeah, it's a form of pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, depression can take different forms. Here's some definitions. Now that we've had a chance to think of some examples and so forth, we might be able to struggle with these depressions. I mean these definitions. One definition is a deep sense of sadness or sorrow. Now, that could happen to anybody, and it wouldn't necessarily mean a depression. B, a lack of motivation to do anything, even enjoyable activities. So you lose interest in everything, basically. Or C, a change in appetite and either weight loss or gain. Some people stop eating when they get depressed. Other people just eat continuously as if eating was going to solve their depression. Sleep disturbances. Sleeping either not enough or too much. And I know patients that when they're depressed, they want to sleep 24/7. Yeah. Feelings of low self-esteem. Poor reasoning and memory and thoughts of death and suicide even. Some people experience just one or two symptoms while others manifest several and suffer for months until the episode ends. And you wonder, the episode, okay, what was the episode? You know? Well, look back over your own personal experiences. Myra's told us a little bit about her experience. Have there been times when you were depressed or discouraged? What kinds of things led to that discouragement or depression? What did you do to keep hope alive? Were you able to stay connected to God through that experience? And what did you learn from it? Those are the kind of questions. You know, can we look back and can we say, and David talks about this, can you look back? Ellen White talks about when you feel it's completely lost and you're ready to commit suicide even. She says, look back to the last time you saw the light. Which I think is a very interesting statement about, look back to the last time you saw the light. Well, in times of economic distress, and we've been through some of those times recently, it is not uncommon to hear examples of people who commit suicide. Carrie mentioned those, some of whom even kill members of their families because of their despair and depression. To them, this seems a better solution than living on with the spiritual and economic pain. Those are the times when we must turn our thoughts to God. And we've already read Psalm 32, David's comments. Notice in these verses that David took two different approaches to his depression. First, he said, I kept quiet, I hid my sins, I didn't want to talk about them, and his suffering got worse. Then he said, I turned to God, I confessed my sin, probably in prayer, and things apparently improved. What would that suggest to us about what should be the solution to depression?
Turning to God.
Prayer.
Yeah, certainly turning to God and discussing it with him. There's a lot of evidence that talking about something helps. Even if you're talking to God and apparently to no other human being, expressing it and trying to spell out what you think the problem is may help a great deal. Well, it's very important to recognize, particularly if there is a serious depression, professional help should be sought, because there are medications that are really helpful. You may need to take them for a while, but that's why the professional help is available. And we're very fortunate to live in a time when it's not just you get depressed and there's nothing you can do. We live in a time where there is something you can do. But I think we also live in a time when there are a lot more reasons for getting depressed, or a lot more opportunities, maybe I should say, because our ancestors lived in a time where everybody had to do quite a bit of physical work just to stay alive. And physical work is one of the natural, exercising, getting those muscles moving, etc., getting the whole body moving, that's one of the best treatments for depression. And if you had to do that every day just to make a living, you would be less likely to get depressed. We're much more prone in our days to sit in his chair. Maybe we're supposed to be working, but our mind might be miles away. And those are dangerous times. Well, Ellen White once said, Volume 4 of the Testimonies, page 533, prayer is the opening of the heart to God as to a friend. Would that be an appropriate thing for a person who is depressed to do?
David seems to have done that on...
Mm-hmm. Multiple occasions.
Right.
Yeah.
It depends.
Mm-hmm.
Get somebody that thinks that they've committed the unpardonable sin.
Mm-hmm.
I would posit with counselors, if you can get one with a Christian background, is mm-hmm. probably more helpful.
Yeah.
And I say that in a broad sense.
Yeah, exactly. Very much so. But if we recognize that God feels our pain, he knows every problem that we could possibly face and he's ready to help, then that's very useful to have a resource like that to turn to. And not forgetting the professional help that we talked about. We should not forget, however, the warnings that God gave, Jesus gave. And for example, in Luke 21:26, look at that. People will faint from fear as they wait for what is coming over the whole earth. For the powers in space will be driven from their courses and so forth. And this is in the middle of a section where it's talking about the end of the world. People fainting from fear. What is that? People fainting from fear.
Jumping out of a window after a stock market crash.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think this is just the type of depression we've been talking about, or is this something that's way beyond that?
Well, this in this context is talking about the end of the world, so it's probably pretty serious.
They seem to be very scared.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if fear and depression are the same in that sense.
Well, let's look at another context. Look at Romans 7, starting with verse 18. See how this fits in with your understanding of depression. Paul says, I know that good does not live in me. That is in my human nature. For even though the desire to do good is in me, I'm not able to do it. I don't do the things I want to do. Instead, I do the evil that I do not want to do. If I do what I don't want to do, this means that I'm no longer the one who does it. Instead, it is sin that lives in me. So I find this law is at work. When I want to do what is good, what is evil is the only choice I have. The only choice I have. My inner being delights in the law of God. But I see a different law at work in my body, a law that fights against the law which my mind approves of. It makes me a prisoner to the law of sin which is at work in my body. What an unhappy man I am. Who will rescue me from this body that is taking me to death? How would you describe that condition?
Well, that's kind of the opposite of what he's found to make up for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what he said after that
mm-hmm.
was what? It was, you know, glory be that mm-hmm. Jesus has done it.
Yep.
You know, is basically it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wouldn't say he was actually depressed there. He was talking about things that were depressing, but with the answer, it's just kind of an antidote.
He was just describing reality.
Well, that's true. But do you think that he was depressed while he was doing that, even though he had the antidote?
I think he was unhappy with it, but I wouldn't call it depression, because he didn't take action or make decisions based on that feeling.
Well, we know now the verses have been added and chapters have been added, and things have been divided up. But in Paul's mind, it just went right on. And then one verse later, something, he says, there is no condemnation now for those who live in union with Christ Jesus. I mean, obviously he felt he'd figured out a solution. I mean, isn't that what that implies?
Mm-hmm. That sounds like another description of reality.
Yeah.
Well, it's the antidote to what he just talked about.
Did Adam and Eve, in their perfection in the Garden of Eden, need counsel?
God came and talked to them every night.
They probably needed counsel, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it was because they were depressed, or was it because needed the experience? They needed experience.
There are lots of things they needed
about.
To learn.
That relationship.
Yeah. New creatures, they had to be programmed, if you want to put it in our lingo.
Think how much better we would all be off if they had followed that guidance.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, but I hate to say this, but is that really counseling? Don't eat that fruit.
Well, I mean, are you saying that God didn't?
Is that a warning? That's a warning, but I don't know if that's really counseling. Is that what I see?
If I say to you, don't eat the strychnine, would you say that was a warning or that's a threat?
Well, warning or a threat, but would it be counsel?
It's a very strong counsel.
Very strong counsel.
We are deluded. The very condensed Reader's Digest, even less than the Reader's Digest version of what God said. I'm sure he said much more than just don't eat that fruit.
Half of this world's history is in the book of, happened by the time you got to the end of the book of Genesis. Half of this world's history by the time you get to the end of Genesis. So it's very condensed.
Yeah, well, that's true, but when you're a new person in the universe, I mean, how much can you teach
not
somebody
universe,
without
this planet.
The experience? What?
Not in the universe. It was on this
planet. Well, that's as far as the universe is
they
concerned.
Were new to the universe.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. Planet. That's what I said.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let's look at a few final conclusion thoughts here as we're running out of time. God counsels us to leave all our worries to him in 1 Peter 5:7. Do you find that easy to do?
Mm-mm. Not always.
And why is that so?
Why is it hard?
Because we want to do it ourselves.
We want to be in control ourselves. Yeah.
We get into situations we shouldn't have got ourselves into sometimes.
It's part of it, we don't trust God.
That too.
Yes. Well, I would say we literally, as foolish as this sounds, we sometimes think, well, I would rather do what I want to do instead of what God wants me to do. In another way, we're saying, I think I know what's better for me right now than God does, which is completely crazy if you stop and think about it and analyze it. But we say, no, I'd rather do it my way right now.
It's been going on for a few thousand years, too.
It's been going on for a long time.
Ken?
Yeah?
We get ourselves into a great deal of difficulty because we never took time today to invite God to, you know, look at the list with us and help us prioritize what's really important to be done today, what's really not, what he wants done today, not what we want done today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what would happen if we really said, okay, God, today I've got a number of things I have to do, but I want you to prioritize. Mm-hmm. What would happen?
Well, you'd have to learn how to listen.
We'd have to learn how to listen. Yeah. Try to think about what Jesus prayed about. Could you pray all night and come out refreshed in the morning? Anybody been able to do that? So Jesus wasn't really human.
How do you make that jump?
Well, nobody, none of us seem to be able to do it.
That doesn't say anything about his humanity. It says more about us than it does about him, I think.
But we're the ones, we all recognize that we're humans. Yeah. And there's serious, you know, there have been serious questions down through the years about whether Jesus was completely human.
We only really hear what he did in the final 3 years or so of his life.
Yeah.
One gets the impression that he started devotional life many, many years
before. Oh, yes,
very
much.
Had to have.
Ellen White, again, who tells us a little bit about those years, and I don't know exactly how she got her information. I mean, I think she was inspired. But she says that he would go out a great while before day, out into the fields, and God and the angels were his instructors. Imagine having those people for your teachers. Well, Ellen White has told us that just before the end of this world, and we keep talking as if we believe that's going to be not too long from now, just before the end of this world, there's going to be a time of trouble coming like nothing that's been in the history of this world so far. Are we prepared for that? Worse than that, she says that some of the people who had been former friends and fellow church members will become our worst enemies. Are we prepared for that? Even members of our own family may turn against us. Jesus said that. Well, as sincere Christians, we must remember that what is beyond the second coming, we must remember what's beyond the second coming and never lose hope. And there's plenty of places, Isaiah 65, 2 Peter 3, Revelation 21, that describe some of that. We know that Christ's suffering was way beyond anything we will ever have to suffer. And yet he lived through it, he left us an example, and we need to think about that and follow his example as far as possible. And never let ourselves forget that God died just for us. See you next week.